Welcome back. It's midday, and now we're going to take a look at the Link. That's the Baltimore Link, the city's new bus system. Governor Larry Hogan promised the bus system overhaul after he killed the proposed Red Line extension of the light rail back in 2015. The governor contended that the $135 million overhaul of the Baltimore bus system would be a better option than the $2.9 billion light rail proposal. MTA officials promised that the Baltimore Link would speed up travel times for commuters and get people closer to more of the places where they work. We talked about Baltimore Link here on Midday right after it launched in June, and now we're going to examine it again, now that it's had a couple of months to work out some of the kinks, which are expected, of course, with any large overhaul of a system like this. So how do you think it's working? Is it easier for you to get to work and where you want to go? You can join our conversation 410-662-8780, our email midday at wipr.org. If you want to grab us on Twitter, our handle is at midday Tom Hall. Joining me here in Studio A, Kevin Quinn. He's the acting director of the Maryland Transit Administration. Before that, he was the agency's director of planning and programming. He's been working on the revamping of the system for some time now. Mr. Quinn, welcome, sir.
Hey, thank you.
And Samuel Jordan is coming back here to Midday today. He's the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. Mr. Jordan, always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Klaus Philipson is here as well. He's an urban planner and the author of Baltimore, Reinventing an Industrial Legacy City. Klaus, it's good to see you as well.
Good afternoon.
So, Mr. Quinn, how's it going? Is the system, you know, living up to the expectations that you had for it?
Yeah. So, you know, we're seeing some good improvements in reliability. I mean, I'll say straight off that, you know, we're seeing improvements in on-time performance. You know, that's how we judge our reliability of our system is on-time performance. And our local routes are already seeing some great improvements. We've seen just over the past couple months about a 6% jump in reliability and on-time performance from the previous system to this new system. We're expecting to see that increase even more as we get underway. You know, I think one thing it's important to really keep in mind is that, you know, Baltimore Link wasn't just about the routes. It's not just about route changes. There's a lot more. You know, when you see those red dedicated bus lanes in downtown Baltimore, you know, that's Baltimore Link. When you see our buses that are now equipped with transit signal priority and communicating with traffic signals, that's part of Baltimore Link. When you see new transit hubs and you see new real-time signage, you know, at many of our stations now, that's Baltimore Link. It's not just the route changes. There's a lot to it, and they all work together. They all work seamlessly together. It's that combination of a redesigned, intelligent transit network combined with these great capital improvements that help our buses get through downtown congestion, to get through traffic lights much better, to have a real seamless, cohesive, integrated transit system. In addition to replacing, you know, nearly 5,000 bus stop signs, you know, overnight through our system. You know, these are all important changes to make to give Baltimore the transit system that they deserve.
Do you have evidence that there are, in fact, more people using all of the different elements of the transit system, light rail, not just the buses, but light rail and subway as well? Is there evidence to suggest that this has, in fact, helped people by integrating these three systems, or at least attempting to do so, that people are using them more?
We are starting to see some improvements of integration of the bus network of folks taking the bus and you know, the way that we designed it was to feed it better into the light rail and the metro system. So, you know, back when they put in the light rail, they put in the metro, the bus system was never really redesigned to have routes that connected particularly well, consciously into those systems. And so now that they are, we are starting to see those connections being made.
And Samuel Jordan, from your perch, yes, and from the folks that you represent and work with and talk to at the Transit Equity Coalition,
yes,
what's your opinion about how it's working so far?
Well, our opinion, Tom, frankly, is that it's been a disaster for the majority of riders with whom we've spoken. In fact, we've seen responses or perspectives probably loosely grouped in two categories. There are the handful of people who say, well, nothing basically has changed for my commute. It's pretty much a wash for me. For those people, we say, then why would we spend $130 million? For the people who say that they've had a disastrous experience with transit, we say that this is what happens when we have a community-specific race-based transit policy. And by that I mean that we always have to keep in context. Remember, when you speak with Kevin Quinn and MTA, there's very rarely context. The context is there would be no Baltimore Link had there been no cancellation of the Red Line. And they have an origin and are linked in this way. The Red Line, as you know, and I'll just make sure that's clear to our listeners, the Red Line offers 10,000 jobs. That's not part of Baltimore Link's portfolio, as I've mentioned before. Dramatically reduced commute times, we'll talk about that. That also is not part of Baltimore Link's prospectus. Connectivity, east-west, 14.2-mile link that's still needed, long needed by Baltimore between Bayview in the east and Woodlawn in the west. We still don't have that. In addition, it offers access to an additional 250,000 jobs in the region within 45 minutes. But don't forget the 19 station areas along that 14.2-mile route. That's another 5,000 jobs and $2 billion in investments because that's where new development will take place, and we can use it. So in other words, the Red Line was a key factor in Baltimore's economic growth for the future. And if Baltimore is going to have a modern transit system, we've got to take a close look at this question of transit equity and community-specific race-based transit policy. By that I mean Governor Hogan, Pete Ron, the Secretary of Transportation, and MTA know exactly who's going to be affected by the changes they make in the transit system. It happens, and it's not accidental, that the most adverse impacts are felt by African-American, low-income, and transit-dependent communities. We put it this way because we've always challenged MTA to acknowledge its role at the nexus of the greatest social issues facing Baltimore in the country right now, for example. Healthcare, education, employment. And what we see is this. For the people who use the system, particularly the transit dependent, if they can't get where they want to go, and the highest priority is getting to work on time, reliably, safely, nothing else can be called progress. Now, what MTA has admitted, Kevin Quinn himself has said just this past week, that commute times are 52 minutes, and we've got them down from 53 minutes, as if we should give them a pat on the back for that. Last year, July 2016, he said commute times were 52 minutes. But where is this coming from? We don't have the data. We don't have the metrics to measure this. And this is models talking about models.
Yeah, and let's talk about metrics. But Mr. Quinn, Mr. Jordan is not by any means the only person who says that Baltimore Link is a poor substitute for what the Red Line would have meant, particularly when we're talking about getting from the west side to the east side. How do you respond to that?
Sure. So my response is that it's apples and oranges. That the Red Line was a 14-mile east-west rail line, and Baltimore Link is an effort to redesign the city's bus system. You know, at MTA we have 350,000 riders a day. About 2/3 of our riders are on the bus system. They're on the bus system, and for decades have had a very unreliable bus system. Mr. Jordan's exactly right. We want to get people to work. We do want to get people to work. And people can't rely on the majority of people in Baltimore that are taking public transit to work are taking the bus. They're taking the bus, and the bus system is what was needed to be fixed to get people to jobs. And that's what Baltimore Link is all about, is providing a better, more reliable system. That is not what the Red Line would have provided for all the folks that are today trying to take the bus to work.
Klaus Philipson, when Kevin Quinn talks about a 6% increase in reliability, the metrics of that, how to figure that out, as a person who studies this, are you confident that the ways we are using to judge the efficacy of the new system are in fact going to be educative and illuminating about whether or not it's actually working or not? And again, 2 months in is still a fairly short period of time to assess any new system.
The metrics are indeed an interesting question. I, just before this radio session here, I looked up at some of the metrics that MTA had developed in 2014 as part of the previous bus reform. And one thing one could probably say is the big difference in the discussion today to what it was like maybe 10 years ago is the question of equity. And as Sam Jordan pointed out, the equity issue has become central to the question of how a city does transportation. And to me, as an urban designer, the relationship of the city and transportation is really the key question around this. And across the country, transit agencies are trying to figure out how to deploy the bus, which is the workhorse of transit systems in large and small cities across the country. And as Kevin Quinn said, it's also the backbone of transit in Baltimore. It's sure that without the Red Line, the bus system has more to do than with the Red Line, so it would be easier to make Link really good with a Red Line in place. But it is still necessary to reform the bus system. So what are the right metrics? And when we are talking about a bus and transportation, we need to also talk about land use. And so the question of whether the disenfranchised communities where the most transit-dependent people live that don't have a car and how long it takes them to get to work. And we see then on these maps that the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance puts out that the poorest neighborhoods have the longest commute times. This is not because the poorest neighborhoods have no transit service or poor, bad transit service. This is because the land use has put the jobs where those communities need to go far out into the suburbs. And getting there with transit is very difficult. And so one of the challenges that the metrics have is that you get unintended consequences. So if you are moving the people on buses into these remote locations where these jobs are, you get long travel times. So if you don't go there, you get shorter travel times. So what does the metric really tell you? So as soon as there are elements in a transportation system that the transit agency doesn't control, such as where are the jobs or what are the gas prices. So you asked about, do you see additional riders? Hardly any transit system in the country currently sees additional transit riders when the gasoline prices are so low. So these external factors can't be all used to blame Baltimore Link, whether it is successful or not, because the question of to measure success is very complicated and difficult.
We have a couple of tweets directed to you, Mr. Quinn. One is, how will back-to-school service impact CityLink's high-frequency service? Obviously, you've been running it during the summer without the kids getting to and from school every morning.
Yeah, so, MTA is the public school transportation provider for the city for about 28,000 school kids a day. And so, first of all, we've been doing an absolute ton of outreach to the schools for the past year. And that's in coordination, very close coordination with Baltimore City Public Schools. We've done presentations to their front offices, put information in newsletters, and really, we've been focused on getting the word out, and I'm happy to talk about that more. But it's been a real effort of ours and a real focus of ours, certainly over the last year.
But that's going to change the game considerably, isn't it?
Well,
all of a sudden, 85,000 kids or however many of them take the bus?
Yeah, so 28. One thing that we end up doing is we add supplemental service. So we have our fixed route services, and so we add additional supplemental service routes that deviate off of those fixed routes. And so we have about 20 or 30 of those that go off of our fixed routes to specifically serve certain schools. So we essentially add capacity to the system to handle those school kids.
And Samuel Jordan, your riders are telling you things anecdotally, but also let me ask you about what kind of metrics you would like to see, what kind of information, what kind of data. You mentioned that
answer that question. I think that's a good question because we're critical about this issue. For example, there has been no origins and destinations study for the bus system since 2008. That's almost 10 years.
And what would an origins and destinations study it's
almost self-explanatory. It lets you know where people begin their commute and transit travel and where they want to go, where they end up, where they want to go. Okay, you need to know that in order to plan a system, all right? MTA has said we haven't conducted an origins and destinations study. In fact, we might get around to it next year.
But so Mr. Quinn, let's stop there for a second. Yeah. How did you design a system if you didn't exactly know or didn't know it as well as perhaps you could have known where people needed to get to?
Sure. So we did have an origins destination survey that was done that was back in 2008. We used that as a good basis of information. our region and our has not changed dramatically in terms of travel patterns. People are still taking 695. The main corridors throughout the city are the same. As we took that data, we were also able to incorporate information from employers. So we went to employers directly and received, say, zip code data of where employees lived. We met with the folks at, say, Amazon or Sparrows Point, where, you know, new job centers are going to be. And so as we met with them, we gathered a ton of data. It was, you know, an origin and destination survey is
so
great.
So you are confident that you had enough information to connect the dots here?
We had enough information and then some to be able to devise a good system. And in addition, the feedback that we got through the community. If you go back to the first version of Baltimore Link, it is drastically different from the final version that rolled out. And that's also in response to community feedback. And getting information and feedback from the community was one of the most important pieces of this entire project in it, and the system that we proposed changed from version to version to version in direct response to community feedback.
All right, Sam, right. we have one comment, then we're going to take a break.
Yes, of course, and we disagree. We want to see the metrics, we want to test the metrics, and we don't believe that you can simply say we have an origins and destinations survey. You have to conduct an origins and destinations study to be precise about that, and that comes from real people with real experience on transit, not the model looking at the model and comparing schedules in this link to the old schedule. I want to make sure that we mention something about the employers, too. When the Baltimore link was rolled out, in fact, in its planning stage, there was enough time to make this known. But we heard no appeal from MTA to the employers in the region. We're going to overhaul the bus system. We're going to overhaul the entire bus system. Even people who haven't never been late at your workplace might be late now from time to time because we have to get used to the system and navigate it. We heard nothing like this. Where was MTA telling the employers to have a break on these people, you know, for this new experience? But we also want to make sure something else that he's made mention of, and that is, with all this outreach they say they have done, why was there no sensitivity to the 3 times 15 minutes late you're out of a job rule? Okay? We need to make sure of that. The other thing we have mentioned is when the rollout occurred, it occurred after the school year was over. So we and everyone else was anticipating problems, confusion, chaos, maybe even dysfunction when students came back to school. Mm-hmm. So we, too, have asked MTA,
right,
Kevin Quinn and his staff about these the idea of an event specifically targeting school students and staff from across the city so that any student can ask any question they have about the link and get it answered. Right. What we've been told, though, and this is what you've just heard, is that we got a list from MTA of presentations made, quite a few of them planned and not yet made, but no data about the dates or the impact.
We will give Ms. Quinn a chance to answer those and other questions. We have a bunch of callers we want to try to get to. We are going to take a little break. Samuel Jordan is the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. Kevin Quinn is the acting director of the MTA. Klaus Philipson is the president of ArchPlan, an architecture and urban design firm. He's long been involved with transportation issues here in Baltimore. Let us know what you think of Baltimore Link. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday, Tom Hall. Before we take a little break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 218 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. Last week, 9 men were the victims of homicide in our city, including 2 teenagers. The names of 3 of them, who were 16, 24, and 29 years old, respectively, have yet to be released by the police. The others are Lamontre Tynes, age 24, Dante Johnson, age 37, Barry Lee, age 34, Derek Ford Sr., age 54, George Madariaga, age 69, and Tyrese Davis. He was 15 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Thank you. And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, the plan to end violence in Baltimore. Second District Councilman Brandon Scott joins me. We're going to talk about the elements of his plan, as well as the proposal released last week by Mayor Catherine Pugh. We'll also talk about the mandatory minimum sentencing bill that the City Council is scheduled to vote on tonight. Plus, comedian Hari Kondabolu joins me ahead of his appearance at the Creative Alliance later this month. He's a very funny guy, and we had a very great time the last time he was on the show, but that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday in the midst of many things that are not at all funny to talk about. We're going to see what Harry has to say about what's going on in Charlottesville and other places. If you're just joining us today, we are talking about Baltimore Link. That's the $135 million revamp of the bus system here in Charm City. The revamped bus system was rolled out in Baltimore almost 2 months ago. So do you use the bus, the subway, the light rail, and are you happy with the public transportation options that you have here in Baltimore? Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. I'm joined here in the studio by Samuel Jordan. He's the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, Kevin Quinn, the acting director of the MTA, and Klaus Philipson. He's an architect, an urban designer, and architectural writer. We have a number of people who'd like to join our conversation. Let's go to William in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah, okay. You know, I've been hearing a lot of theoretical stuff thrown around, but we got a small business in Baltimore County. We got four employees that come out from different areas of the city. They're all minorities. They take the buses to work. I can honestly tell you, every one of them has told me it's added an hour to their commute time. They got to get up an hour earlier. They got to take more transfers. And then at the end of the day, it's the same deal. It's like an extra hour to get home. They're always asking, oh, can you please drop me off at this such and such a spot so I can pick this bus up? In my opinion, it has been nothing but an effort to save money. They were going to spend a couple $1 billion, and they said, oh, well, we'll scrap that. We'll spend a couple $1 million and paper over the problem and say that we did a good job, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Quinn?
Yeah. So, you know, as we've been reaching out to employers, you know, William, you know, I'd be happy to learn more about where you are and where you're located and how we can get employees to your work better. You know, a lot of this effort, we did do a good bit of outreach and to address, you know, Mr. Jordan's kind of comment earlier, we did a good bit of outreach to employers to try to get ahead of this and to try to let them know that we were designing the bus system, that we were, you know, redesigning the bus system and to try to be sure that they knew about what was happening, you know, before it happened so that employees weren't affected. In this case, I'm happy to work again with William to try to find a way to, you know, make his employees' commute time better.
Do you have any sense that, you know, obviously when you redesign a system, there are going to be winners and losers. There are going to be some people who have a rougher time than they had before with the old system and where the stops were and the frequency and stuff. I mean, do you have any sense of, are you confident that vastly more people are in a better situation than they were before the system went in to effect?
Well, so this is a good instance, right? So there's four employees that are going to a certain location, right? And so, you know, we may have had buses that were running every 15 minutes all day to carry four people. And we found that as we looked into the data that we had many locations, say, going up into the county where there were not many employees that were going places and we had buses running all day. It doesn't make sense to run buses every 15 minutes for just a few people. And so we may have reduced some frequencies that it sounds like may have impacted someone's commute time. But, you know, that's in an effort to put buses to where people are going, the majority of people are going, to reduce commute times, to have faster commute times and provide a much more reliable service than what we used to have years ago, which was not connected, which was not reliable, that nobody could count on to get to work. And that's what Baltimore Link was all about.
Klaus Philipson, we have a tweet from Paul who says, why is the transit union against real-time bus tracking when it comes to data? Is that something you're aware of? Or Mr. Quinn, are you aware of that? Or Mr. Jordan? I mean, are we, in fact, even in a position to collect the data that we need to know whether or not this thing is working or not?
Yeah, that Mr. Quinn would probably be the better person to answer what the ATU wants and doesn't want. And it is, however, interesting that they are very opposed to the bus reform. And since they are representing the operators, it is a very unfortunate condition because to work a transit system everybody has to sing from the same page. The city has to work with the MTA, and the MTA internally has to work from the same basis. And I wanted to just comment on a few potential fundamental issues and problems with the link reform. So one of them is that it is supposedly a network of high-frequency buses, and high-frequency is anything under 15 minutes or should actually be 10 minutes, so that you don't need a schedule. You can just show up at the bus stop, and then your next bus comes. And that was achieved by spreading the high-volume buses over a larger geographic area. But what you get as a result in a certain corridor, when before you had like five or six lines serving the same corridor in a high-traveled bus area, now you get only one or two lines coming, so your frequency is actually going down if the bus actually doesn't show up. And the bunching of the buses is still happening, and is possibly worse than before. And when the buses bunch, that means instead of the 10 or 15-minute wait, you all of a sudden have a 30-minute wait. Another thing with the separation of local bus and city bus is that the city buses require transfers, or that you need to transfer when you come with a local bus towards the high-frequency system. And these transfers are supposed to be, you know, short, and then it wouldn't add an hour to the travel time. But if something doesn't work out right, and what one can see right now is that the local link buses are running pretty well on time and according to the headways, but the city link buses are not, because they are the ones that carry the higher volumes of passengers. And so the question that you asked about where is the bus actually, where is it located, and that is the oversight over the bunching. How do you correct that when you notice that buses bunches? How do you correct that? And that requires technological changes that are not currently in place.
We have an email from a listener, Kevin Quinn, who says, do you or any of the upper management of the MTA use the bus system on a regular basis?
Yes, many of us do. You know, I live a little south of Towson. I'm a CityLink Red rider. I do take the CityLink Red to work. We have other folks in senior management that take buses all the time. As we were doing a lot of outreach, I think there is a very common misconception that folks at the MTA, that whether it's senior management or MTA staff, don't use public transit. And in fact, they do. Many of them do. And we use public transit every day.
Doug in Reservoir Hill, if you could make a quick comment, we are happy to have you.
It's directed, again, Klaus had brought up the fact that I call it stacking, but bunching. I could be working in my house Saturdays and Sundays on North Avenue and Mount Royal. I think that's the Walbrook Junction line. I don't know if it's called Gold or whatever now. And sometimes there'll be the articulated bus and then a bus bumper to bumper coming up North Avenue. And then about 5 minutes later, here comes another bus that's heading the same direction. Is there any supervision on these buses?
I mean,
thank you.
And Samuel Jordan, are you hearing this?
Yes,
I am,
and I want to comment because
stacking.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the 19th broadcast, when we were your guests, we talked about in June the 19th, we were getting real-time reports that I reported on the air of bunching, stacking. In fact, there seemed to be no real understanding of how that's going to be controlled. In fact, we can't say that there is less stacking than before. There seems to be more, but that's also anecdotal. We want actual facts and data and metrics by which to prove that. So we want to make sure also that it's clearly understood that 10 seconds, you've got to invest in a multimodal modern transit system. There's no planning done for the link. It was announced in October, 4 months after the cancellation of the Red Line. Had been no planning. And so many specific technological needs have not been met. For example, you would expect it would be GPS for every bus. Right now, we're just looking at people who are looking at buses as they pass a certain point and eyeballing it and reporting it. So, that is not the kind of investment
we just
need.
Have a couple seconds left. I mean, are there plans to increase the efficacy and the reliability of the data that you're collecting to understand?
Sure. So we have a fully funded $35 million procurement that was approved a couple months ago to completely replace all the technology on our buses. We've got a brand new fleet of Metro rail cars coming in. Light rail vehicles that are being overhauled. And in the next few years, we're going to have a completely new transit vehicles all over our system to really complement our new bus system.
Well, I appreciate your accepting our invitation to come on the show. And Sam Jordan, Klaus Philipson as well. I appreciate having you guys come back. We will, of course, stay on top of this. And thanks very much to all of you. Appreciate it. Kevin Quinn is the acting director of the MTA. Samuel Jordan, the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. And Klaus Philipson is an architect and urban designer. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk about the vote scheduled tonight in the Baltimore City Council about imposing mandatory minimum sentences. So join us tomorrow with Councilman Brandon Scott as well as comedian Harry Kondabalu here on Midday. Thanks to the Diz for supplying lunch. They're located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. They're open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. They're on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.